A couple of old shows find new life on TV. We're talking reboots on Pop Life.
On-demand audio from WAER is made possible by contributions from listeners like you. To give or to find more information, visit our website, waer.org.
Welcome back to Pop Life. After a brief hiatus, I'm Joe Lee with pop culture ambassador Bob Thompson, director of the Blair Center for TV and Popular Culture at Syracuse University. And we're talking reboots today. In 1988, ABC Television introduced us to an Illinois working class family called the Connors.
Your coffee?
Isn't there coffee every morning?
Yes.
In the 15 years we've been married, has there ever been one morning where there wasn't any coffee?
No.
Then why do you have to ask me every morning if there's coffee?
Is there toast?
The show Roseanne reached number one in the Nielsen ratings and was the most watched television show from 1989 to 1990. A few of its episodes are listed as some of TV Guide's greatest episodes of all time. Bob, talk about the premise of this show back when it first started airing.
Well, back when it came out, it was about a struggling working class family living somewhere in Illinois. It was either a little outside of Chicago or down south. That kind of became vague after a while. But they were a working class family. And by working class, I mean they were struggling from paycheck to paycheck. They were just one step away from the electricity being turned off. In fact, in one episode, the electricity was turned off. Roseanne had all kinds of jobs that just would suck the soul from you. But unlike Married with Children, which had debuted a year before that, or The Simpsons, which was just its crazy cartoon dysfunctionality, they really loved each other. They yelled at each other. Mm-hmm. They screamed at the top of their lungs. But it was a very, you know, kind of loving family. And it wasn't the first time we'd seen working class families before. The Life of Riley, but both on television and radio. The Honeymooners, for that matter, which is an old classic. The Flintstones was a working class family. Laverne and Shirley, Good Times, Sanford and Son, certainly. Mm-hmm. So we'd seen a lot of these. But Roseanne took it into some really interesting territory that was both really funny, but at the same time, it aroused sympathy, I think especially for people who may not have been living paycheck to paycheck, that they may want to think twice before they treat the person who's serving them at the drive-thru or whatever the way they, you know, generally tend to treat them. And in that sense, I think it was a very humanitarian kind of program.
So we fast forward to 2018. The show has new life. And really, it's not a traditional reboot. A reboot is when you blow up the original concept and do it all over. This is more of a revival or a continuation because these are the same characters. They're just older, different stage of life. And it now has a bit of a political edge to it.
How could you have voted for him, Roseanne?
He talked about jobs, Jackie. He said he'd shake things up. I mean, this might come as a complete shock to you, but we almost lost our house the way things are going.
Have you looked at the news? Because now things are worse.
Not on the real news.
Oh, please!
It does, but I think it's being given credit for having a lot more of a political edge than it has. I mean, the whole Roseanne, of course, has been talking for a long time about being a Trump supporter. Roseanne has also been talking about some other really disturbing things. Her communications on Muslims, for example, are kind of alarming on a number of different levels. So not only does Roseanne, the human being, talk about her support of Donald Trump, Roseanne, the character, does as well. Mm-hmm. But everybody talks about how, oh, this is the, you know, the new sitcom for the Trump era. We haven't seen many episodes yet, so we'll have to see. But they did this set piece where Laurie Metcalf, who plays Jackie, Roseanne's sister, and Roseanne haven't been talking for months or a year, I don't know what, because one is a Trump supporter and one is a Trump hater.
Mm-hmm.
But in the first episode, they take care of this pretty quickly. They have a nice civil conversation. They hug, they kiss and make up. And then the show goes on to become the same Roseanne we always knew, mm-hmm. which is a pretty progressive kind of program. The second episode is about the tolerance that Roseanne and her husband learn to give to their grandchild, who is a young boy, but he likes to wear sparkly dresses, and he's exploring his gender identity. And that sounds to me pretty much like the old progressive Roseanne. So they've really pulled, and I think that's one of the reasons this may really work and why it's worked so well so far, is that they've made a nod to the fact that, you know, we acknowledge this population of our fellow citizens, but then they go on and do kind of the old things. It's going to be really interesting. There's only a total of 9 episodes. We saw the first 2 mm-hmm. on opening night, which ratings, by the way, are now up to 21.9.
That is
killer good
ratings.
So I'm going
to scratch this 18.4.
18.4 was the morning after. Okay. And then now with all the DVRs and the plus 7s and all that kind of stuff. So it was a huge hit. We'll have to see what the next ones bring. And it got renewed for a second season, which is kind of remarkable because it's not as though the likes of Laurie Metcalf and John Goodman are not busy doing mm-hmm. other things. I think John Goodman has been in every movie made in the last 20 years.
Yeah, he's been very busy. So John Goodman's back. Laurie Metcalf is back. Sarah Gilbert. Michael Fishman, I believe, is back as mm-hmm. the son. And we have a brown grandchild.
Well, it's unclear because in the first episode, the son has a child, mm-hmm. Which is Roseanne's grandchild, and everybody has been saying she's biracial. Mm-hmm. I think she might not be biracial, but and there's been nothing said about it, which was in itself a progressive move. Mm-hmm. They just didn't mm-hmm. make a deal. Here she is there. So it may turn out, if we ever find out, that she's his biological biracial child, or it may turn out that she's adopted. We don't know what, mm-hmm. But her very presence there, once again, is a real kind of statement of what Roseanne always did. Roseanne, way back in the later seasons, but this was still mid-90s. It was still relatively unusual. They had regular characters, mm-hmm. gay regular characters, lesbian regular characters. Roseanne gets kissed by a woman in mm-hmm. the sixth season, Mariel Hemingway, no less. Mm-hmm. And that was before the Ellen coming out mm-hmm. episode. It was before Will and Grace. So it was very ahead of its time, and it continues in that, in treating these kinds of things as though they're natural, mm-hmm. and as though they're normal, which I think is a good thing.
So now you were a part of a conversation on the program On Point, which airs here on WAER, and I guess it's either the anticipation of what people think Roseanne is going to bring with regard to her own personal political beliefs, or that one scene that you described between her and her sister that has people kind of going crazy. I mean, there are people that are, they are pretty upset at what they think this show is going to sort of normalize Donald Trump's behavior.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there is the point that anytime you've got anything that supports Donald Trump, mm-hmm. there are going to be arguments, and these are sound arguments can be made, that by supporting Donald Trump, you are therefore supporting everything that Donald Trump has said. So a lot of people are very exercised over the fact that you've got a main character on a beloved show with tens of millions of people watching it who stand for, by supporting Trump, all of these kinds of things. However, if you watch that show, it's not like Roseanne is shouting, you know, build a wall. Mm-hmm. It's not like she's retweeting mm-hmm. Things from the president. All we really find out is that she voted for Trump, and there's a little sly joke that she thinks Fox News is the real news. Mm-hmm. They didn't mention mm-hmm. Fox News by name, but it was clear what that joke was about. So she certainly has that part in her profile. But for all of the talk we've heard over the week after this thing aired, it was a shockingly apolitical show, if by political we mean overt conversations mm-hmm. about issues and arguments about attitudes towards all these things. It was certainly filled with politics simply by what it presented and who these characters are. And we should remember, if we want to talk about fair and balanced, mm-hmm. Yes, Roseanne is a Trump supporter in that show. But Jackie, who is a major character, played by somebody now who has got a lot more critical cred than she did the first time around, is a vehemently anti-Trump supporter. So the hardest complaints are the ones about some of the things that Roseanne has said as a human being, not as a character, that have been really problematic.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing to examine is, A, how does it sustain viewership if its namesake artist is floating things like Pizzagate and, as you said, making some pretty disturbing remarks about Arab Americans. Is there a risk for ABC in having her be out there that way and trying to build audience? I mean, we say build audience, and it has a built-in audience, but sustain that audience.
Yes, I think there's that issue. And there's also the issue of, I think, you know, the public relations issue, even if they're sustaining a big audience. Because let's face it, 20 million people is a huge rating. There's 330 million people in the country. You don't need to get everybody to watch a show to make it a hit. So they could potentially become a big hit with people who that isn't a problem for. But there is the optics of that. And this gets us back to that age-old question. Do we still watch Woody Allen movies? Mm-hmm. What do we do with I Spy and The Cosby Show? For that matter, now Transparent and House of Cards. I think it was Colbert that once made a joke saying, we need a new awards like the Emmys and Oscars for the best movie and television show that we can't watch anymore. So I think ABC walks a fine line. I think it was USA Today maybe that did a big, really kind of thoughtful essay on what could ABC potentially be stepping into with this. And what surprised me, we talked about it on that On Point show you were talking about, but the vast majority of the coverage of Roseanne in that spectacular week when that's what everybody was talking about after the debut, very little discussion of some of the dicier stuff that Roseanne herself has said as opposed to the character on the show.
Yeah. I've heard folks sort of defend, and I don't know if defend is the right word, but defend the show by saying, you know, it's not that much different than Archie Bunker. We loved Archie Bunker, except in my opinion, Archie Bunker didn't, not opinion, but Archie Bunker didn't have use of Twitter. Carol O'Connor,
right.
Carol O'Connor didn't. It wasn't out there tweeting all kinds of outrageous stuff.
But that's an interesting point. You're right. That would have that's a hard thing to even speculate. But Archie Bunker, the All in the Family, was a really troublesome show in a lot of ways because Norman Lear, of course, was a dyed-in-the-wool, you know, liberal, civil rights supporter, still is in his 90s, still got his name on the new reboot of One Day at a Time, which it is very much in that tradition. But All in the Family did present a bigot, a guy who held a lot of really, really problematical opinions. And within the first episode, he had become a beloved, cuddly, you know, the bigot we all love.
Yeah.
And within a few weeks of that show being on, it started in 71, so there was a presidential election coming out. There were Archie Bunker for President bumper stickers, buttons. There were a lot of people out there who weren't watching Archie Bunker, seeing him as Norman Lear meant him to be, as a buffoon. They were saying, finally, someone who's saying what I've been thinking all along. And Lear, to this day, doesn't like to have that brought up.
So let's come back together after the last episode of Roseanne this season and talk a little bit more about how we think the season went and whether or not it stayed true to its nature or whether or not Roseanne kind of threw a monkey wrench into it. We'll see. We'll have to see what she does as the season goes on. A true reboot of a classic show debuts on Netflix this month.
Danger, Will Robinson, danger. Danger, Will Robinson, danger.
Lost in Space ran 83 episodes from 1965 to 1968. It depicted a space pioneer family, the Robinsons, and you can think of Swiss Family Robinson in outer space, who embarked on one of history's great adventures, man's colonization of space. And Bob, I chuckle now at the fact that back in 1965, their future, when this took place was 1997.
So right.
The creators gave us way too much credit for our technological advances than we actually achieved.
2001, A Space Odyssey. The only thing that's come true is 1984. That happened earlier than that.
Exactly. But the show obviously debuted when I was born, but I grew to love it as a kid watching it in reruns. First season was in black and white. The last two seasons were in color. And it was situational. You know, there was a different situation each episode. But for a kid who just dreamed of traveling in outer space, it was a dream come true for me to see something like that and Star Trek and others on television. Were you a fan of that show?
I was. And I think it was especially seductive to kids because it not only had a kid, but it had a little robot.
Yeah.
Who, of course, had been ripped off of Forbidden Planet in some significant sort of ways. Star Trek didn't have a kid.
Right.
And therefore, it didn't have that kind of connection. But that's, I think, why Star Trek was taken a little more seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were both pretty childish in their script writing, with obvious exceptions. And it is interesting that this plays a season before Star Trek. And mm-hmm. in many ways, it lays out all the things that Star Trek would do. This family is, in this case, lost in space as opposed to going there deliberately. But they're on the Jupiter 2, mm-hmm. which is like the Enterprise, and they're going from planet to planet mm-hmm. Trying to find their way home. In many ways, I think they could have litigated the next year when Star Trek came out because it was very much a similar kind of program. But it did have that. It was a great entry level. You could be a pretty little kid and get into that because mm-hmm. there was that character and his robot who played very, very important parts in, you know, the evil guy that got them lost in the first place, but was constantly trying to find ways to get these people or these beings from other planets to get him home and not them. And that always gets, foiled by every episode. And the kid has a lot to do with that foiling.
And, you know, the way it started out in that first season, Dr. Smith was a really evil.
Oh, right. He became domesticated. Yeah. That's a very good point.
He became domesticated and a bit of a buffoon and comedic relief later on. But in that first season, it's actually kind of scary.
You're absolutely right. And black and white made it even scarier because it was more distant. It mm-hmm. was that it had that more mediated feel to it back then, before the Tony Soprano, Walter White era. You can have somebody who's really, really evil, but if they're a regular, sooner or later, mm-hmm. you've got to kind of turn them into, and usually they go from evil genius to clown, is how it happens. Wouldn't be until we'd get to shows like Dallas, where you could sustain evil mm-hmm. over the course of multiple seasons.
And so, like many other classic shows, it's become source material for a new series.
This is Will Robinson of the 24th Colonist Group. First human to discover evidence of an alien intelligence.
And this is a true reboot. They're doing it all over, blowing it up a little bit. There are some changes. Well, what's not changed is the pioneering family of space colonists, and they veer dramatically off course. They're lost in space. What's new? We're going to more of a serial storytelling in today's fashion of television. So we're not situational each and every show. It's going to carry the show's theme and plot throughout the season, I suppose. The magic of modern special effects, the trailer for this thing looks stunning.
It really does.
It really sucked me in. It looks fantastic. It's a more serious treatment. It's being likened to Battlestar Galactica in how edgy it will be. We have a younger Will Robinson. Dr. Smith is a woman being played by Parker Posey. The characters now have backstories, and so it's I read one review that likened it to Lost.
Yeah, they in fact, I read that review too. The headline was Lost, in space.
Yeah. So that'll be interesting to see how certain aspects of their character, their relationships develop over time. We're going to get some backstories in that. Darker and grittier than the original, and darker and grittier than the 1998 movie that was released with William Hurt. And the robot.
Yeah, we all like to forget that one.
Yeah, really. Yeah. The robot is not their creation. The robot is not something that they took on the journey. It's some kind of being or robot that was discovered on one of the planets they landed on. So I think that's going to serve as a pretty interesting series. And as a sci-fi fan, I'm just really excited to see something coming to the small screen.
And for you, it's perfect. Lost in Space, the original childish, kind of infantile thing, you get to watch when you're a child. And now, you know, you loved Lost in Space. If you went back and watched the reruns now, you'd probably think, ooh, boy, what was I thinking? But now this thing is aimed much more at, I think, your sensibility at this age. And all those things you named sound to me like perfect adaptations, because to make something like this relevant, I mean, you can do Full House over again successfully by just doing the same thing. But Lost in Space has got the potential to be a really interesting show in this era of serialization and better writing and all of that kind of thing. And I think the Battlestar Galactica is a great example. There was a reboot that became so far superior to its original.
Yeah.
That Battlestar Galactica reboot was a fine, fine show, complex, philosophical, thought-provoking. The original Battlestar Galactica was fun, but they took that to completely different places, and it sounds to me like Lost in Space is going to do the same thing. And if it does that, the distance between the original and the reboot is going to be several light years.
Absolutely. The new Lost in Space debuts on Netflix on April 13th. And if you're wondering if the well-known Danger Will Robinson robot will be making that series, it does, but it's a little creepier.
Impact detected. Brace for impact. Brace for
Danger Will Robinson.
Thanks for joining us, Bob. Look forward to getting back together, talking about some of these shows, and we'll see how they develop over time. To get past episodes of Pop Life, subscribe via Apple Podcasts. You can visit WAER.org, or you can like the Pop Life Facebook page at Pop Life WAER. Until next time.